Blog Talk Radio.
You don't know the cause of the oil
in my alabaster box. And though she spoke no words, everything she said was fair. And she poured the oil for her master from her box of alabaster. And I came to pour my praise on him like oil from Mary's alabaster's box. Don't be angry if I wash his feet with my tears, that I dry them with my hair, with my hair. See, you were there the night they found me. You did not feel what I felt when you left his loving arms all around me. And you don't know the cause of the oil in my alabaster star. You don't know the cause. You don't know the cause of my oil in my alabaster star. Stay tuned for more, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed the entertainment. Mary's Alabaster's box is a mystery. We're getting ready to go to that box and bring out some mysteries that you might have never heard before. And I would like to offer a disclaimer before we start. The views and the concepts of the speaker, the host, does not necessarily express that of Blog Talk Radio Station nor a Project 2019. This is according to Omi and the Tribe. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned because we know we're going to have to gear up with the power of faith in order to do this segment. Stay tuned and go with me as I do the power of faith. We'll take our station identification right now.
The power that feels so secure.
Challenge a topic like invoking the Mary Magdalene spirit. It's way overdue, ladies and gentlemen. It should have long been talked about. Now, as you know, I am a poet. For those of you who don't know that, I am a poet and I aim to show it. And as you have noticed that a lot of my commercials have been created through my poetry or spoken word, I'd like to read you something from another young lady who was also a poet, for Lane Makiba. And it reads, they said she, let me start over because I want to do her justice in getting into the character. They said the sister was a poet. They didn't say that she would make me clap and scream, and they only said she was the poet. Not that she would have me acting like a fool, amening and right on it, and a few, I heard that, hand snapping, fanning, grinning, and nodding with strangers. They only said she was a poet. I didn't expect a sister friend, and I didn't know that I would learn about and be exalted and very, very sad when she had to end. That's what most people think of poets. They find out that they're funny. They find out that they have a sense of humor, and they find out that they like to entertain. I like to take that poem as ownership today. And I'd like to share with you one of my own, because Mary Magdalene was really a real sister soldier. But here is my rendition of the real sister soldier.
A Real Soldier, read by the author Onika Bidiako Garth. Didn't come here to put on your gear, aligning myself with soldiers standing in fear. I'm not just rapping, for I'm real sincere. This time was reserved for those who could persevere. You got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier, and that no weapons formed against me, no weapons formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. This is for all you detailed characters in disguise. No longer will you be able to reprise. Didn't come here to win your medal prize. I'm on a mission. That's what you really despise. You've got a real soldier. I thought I told you that you got a real soldier, and that no weapon formed against me, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. I took a job on tour overseas to only discover that my family and I now would be under siege. I'm behind enemy lines, fighting in a war that's not even mine. I aim to stand my ground like the Board of Education versus Brown. You've got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier, and that no weapon formed, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you imposters. So it was your plan to inseminate false evidence to incriminate, which only led you to discriminate. Was it the scholar in me that caused you to hate, forcing you to enter into this fatal debate? Didn't you think that you could actually succeed to execute your own laws that you wouldn't even heed? You got a real soldier. I thought I had told you that you got a real soldier. And that no weapon formed against me, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you impostor. While looking back in retrospective, you never should have challenged the queen of intellectual. Why didn't you know that I was sent from the green light of the benevolent? I'm battling you right here on your own land in the Netherlands. Why, the very cries of the people, they summons me here. They have a mighty warrior void of all fear. Why, my very words are charged with energy and ordered not to return unto me void, but to accomplish that which is intended. And to your very ways you have amended. I'm a soldier. I thought I had told you that I'm a soldier and that no weapon formed against me shall prosper. So lay down your arms, you impostor. Refuse to take your brand. Instead, I took a stand. Now watch me enter into a divine man. Attempted cultural genocide. I wonder, will the courts override, or will this be a case for the media to decide? Wait! Hold up! Didn't I tell you? I was a born strategist. While you're dealing with one of the baddest practitioners, born of the sign of fire, why I entered this world with water surrounding me, having the whole host of heaven on my side. Therefore, I will not be reprised. Why, I was born in the year of Mayat, which embodies the doctrine of divinity of law and order. I'll weigh your heart against the double halls of truth and justice, and the rule a standard against you. I'll measure your deeds against the cubic two. Then I'll throw the papyrus scepter book at you. By now, you should know who I am. By now, you should know who I am. I'm a real soldier. I'm more than a conqueror.
Ladies and gentlemen, that poem was written by Omi Inka. And I played that poem so at the end of our discussion, you might learn who Mary Magdalene is. She was a soldier, and she was one that carried the mission and the burden for our Lord and Savior, our prophet, Jesus Christ. And we will explain that further as we go further into detail. But right now, I think you should know what our doctoral teaching is and where we're coming from. And while we're preaching from a perspective of African spiritualism, and from time to time, you will hear a bit of that Christian faith, amen, and in Jesus' name. Because we still have a foundation that we came from, ladies and gentlemen. And the elders have been indoctrinated in that, and we can't ask them to give it up. So when you hear the elders pray and they say, amen, and in the name of Jesus, know that we are gradually helping our elders to make the transition into oneness with African spiritualism. But in the meantime, we do not disrespect them by asking them to pray in the manner that we do. But I will like to give you a little bit about what we believe in our doctrines in the Yoruba belief. What the Yoruba belief is as follows. There is one supreme God. There is no devil. And I repeat, there is no devil. Except for the day you were born and the day you are supposed to die. There is not a single event in one's life that cannot be forecast. And if necessary, change. Your spirit lives on, ladies and gentlemen, after death, and can reincarnate through blood with relatives and be reborn again with a specific path in mind. Divination serves as a road map to your path, ladies and gentlemen. Our ancestors exist and must be honored, respected, and consulted. I repeat, our ancestors exist and must be honored, respected, and consulted. The Orishas force their forces of nature. They live within each of us and deal with the affairs of man. You must never serve, initiate harm to any human being or the universe for that matter, which you are a part of, the spiritual, physical, mental, and emotional is real and exists and at all times is at work together to balance things out, to balance things, to sacrifice, to guarantee success. What the Yoruba rejects are as follows. These are the things we do not embrace. We are born in sin. We don't believe that. We don't believe you're born in sin and shaped in iniquity. The Europeans, that we do not believe that the Europeans civilized us and gave us civilization. We do not believe that Jesus is the only way to get through to God. There are many paths. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, our doctrinal belief. We also believe in teaching the rituals and traditions. And we also believe that the most important thing and the question that one can ask themselves is to be or not to be African. And that is a question that African Americans must ask themselves. And ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready to go into our talking cure, remember we must honor and revere our ancestors. And if you haven't started to write your list of names of ancestors, you should start doing that. And you should call on them and honor them and consult them. Will you please come with me as we get ready to call on our ancestors? And this is a part you can participate in, ladies and gentlemen. And we do this because it is a format, it is a program, and it is to teach you that at all times that you must perform rituals and procedures. And you must understand why you're doing it. It's very important. And the main thing is to honor and revere your ancestors and respect them and consult them when it's necessary. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to ask permission from my elders to speak and see if she can give me permission to speak. Do I have permission to speak, Elder? Do you have permission to speak, Elder?
Yes, by all means, you have permission to speak.
Thank you, Elder. I'm glad we have an elder in the house. Ladies and gentlemen, will you come with me? I am now about to become purified. And as I explained to the listening audience, it was in order for women to be purified before they came back into the sanctuary. They were ostracized during specific months of the menstrual, but they could not enter into the holiest of holies. And the traditional ritual is to be purified before you go before the holiest of holies. And I'm going to ask Baba to prepare the purification. Baba, is the purification prepared?
Purification is prepared.
Commence with the purification, Baba. And I'm going to wash my face because you know I can't go into the vineyard with a stale face. I'm going to pour libations to the west. I'm going to pour libations to the east. Pour libations to the south. And pour libations to the north. Father, is the purification complete?
Purification is complete.
Thank you so very much, Father. Ladies and gentlemen, as you stand to your feet, you are now standing on holy ground. We also pour water to the ground to make sure that the ground is fertile and ready for taking root. If you haven't already done so, you might want to take your ancestors' list out so that you can call out the names of your ancestors. As we get ready to call out the names of our heroes and sheroes. And ladies and gentlemen, you could bypass the heroes and sheroes and go right to your ancestors if you like. And we're going to do that this evening because we had such a long introduction. We take our bell out, ladies and gentlemen, and we ring that bell. We call on the ancestors' name and awaken them to come forward. I call Shane Lilly to the front. I call Robert Jenkins to the front. I call Carrie Hudson to the front. Clara Mae Jenkins to the front. Tommy Pete Harvey. Essie Lee Pope, Ashe. Eugene Lilly, Ashe. Marvin Eugene Jenkins, Shay. Robert Jr. Jenkins, Shay. Mary Lou Hawkins, Shay. Isa Lilly, Shay. Dora Lilly, Shay. Emmanuel Day, Shay. I call Ruby Lilly, Shay. Sam Lilly, Shay. George Lilly, Shay. I call Ruby Bracken, Shay. Clifford Bracken, Shay. Lucille Day,
Shay. I call Lucille. I call Ludell James. Shay. Louise Lord. Shay. I call the name of Michelle Harvey. Shay. I call Bessie Lilly. Shay. I call Tom Harvey. Shay. I call Mary Lou Hawkins. Shay. I call Michael Harvey. Shay. I say, so be it, so let it be done. Ladies and gentlemen, as you stand on the holy ground, take your hands and shake them out front of you to create a vibration and a frequency. Africans are known to be givers. Sometimes we can take in so much for ourselves that we must remember to give out and give in to those that are in need. Now pressing your hands straight out in front of you, sending that energy out to those friends and loved ones who made it through this year but need a little bit more strength to carry on. Support the weak, I say. Support the weak. Those who have made falling down and can't get up, send out the vibration to them now, I say. Those Mary Magdalene's who got and taking a bad rap and need to clear their name, lift them up, I say. Lift them up where they belong. To those women who carry the mitochondria, the bloodline of the DNA of our African ancestors, may they live on and carry on the name of African women. Those brothers and sisters who might be behind enemy lines, fighting in a war that's not even there, I say release them, I say. Let them come home. If the government has them involved in a JAG situation and they can't void a contract and come home, I say release them. Allow them to come home to their children, the military wives, the soldiers who have signed themselves up for the journey. But now, after their deed has been done, release them and let them go. Send those soldiers home. For those caretakers who are taking care of their children and who are keeping them beyond the time, who are having to be a surrogate mothers and fathers, I say lift them up. Give them the courage and the know-how to do their jobs as a surrogate mother. I say to those ministers out there who have preached a bad rap about our loving sister Mary Magdalene, I say wake up. Tell them the truth about the two Mary Magdalene. Tell them the truth about the two Mary Magdalene. And give them the background knowledge about her past history. I say give them the information. And to those deacons who might be forcing the women out of the church and taking over their position, and we're not allowing them to be women deacons, I said open up the doors and embrace the women. And to those of you who only see the gender of a male in the spirit and scheme of things, I say embrace the goddess, the female entity, because we now know that there could not be a world family without the mitochondria of a black woman, the seed of a black woman. I say open up the door now and let truth prevail wherever it might be. Let truth come forward today. Let the frequencies carry the truth across the airways today. So that today, as we preach this thing about our loving sister Mary Magdalene, people will see the truth. And we decree this thing today in the name of Oluduamare, Ilede, and Olorun. We decree that the spirit of Mary Magdalene will be uplifted and it will be vindicated. Vindicate Mary Magdalene's spirit today, I say, and lift her up. Lift her up, ladies and gentlemen. Women, bring and develop your Bethany experience all over the world. Create the Bethany houses again to teach misinformed people. Yes, they went to Bethany, a small city where Mary was from. And now there are Bethany houses springing up all over the nation. The ultimate outcome is to create Bethany homes to teach the truth about who our Mary Magdalene was. Are you whole and are you free, Mary? Are you whole and are you free? We denounce the stigma over you, and we pronounce you free of the stigma of the prostitute. We denounce it today. All the sisters all over the world, unite with me as I empower the Mary Magdalene spirit. We've already invoked it. We've already woke her up. Now it's time to talk about her gospel. And I decree it today that if henceforward the gospel of Mary Magdalene shall be known. We thank you for your opportunity of going all the way with us. Mary Magdalene is whole and she's free now. Mary, are you whole and are you free? Mary, are you whole and are you free? We invoke your spirit again that you might be free, Mary. Bring harmony and peace to relationships today, I pray. Today, I pray, Mary, that you will bring relationships together and you will teach the true meaning of the Mary Magdalene spirit. Thank you so very much, ladies and gentlemen. Let's go into the sanctuary at the wrong place. Going into the sanctuary, ladies and gentlemen. Take someone's arm and go in one by one, two by two, and three by three as we go into the sanctuary. The living Episcopal sanctuary. We know we are the sanctuary. Take your places. Please take your seat. Have a seat. Take your places, ladies and gentlemen. And please be seated as we begin the discussion. Hurry, take your places. If you are seated, may we stand on your shoulders, ancestors. Hurry, please take your places. Take your places. Thank you for hurrying and taking your place. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You have now embarked upon the 26th segment of the Care to Read Show, How to Develop Your Natural Intuition for Understanding the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. Thank you for joining Omi and the crew. The tribe is here, and we will be having Dr. Jamel join us on this segment. As you know, we started the discussion about invoking the Mary Magdalene spirit. Today, in one of our featured books, we are going to talk about the topic of Mary Magdalene, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. And ladies and gentlemen, because of the sake of time, I'm going to get right into my subject. And I'll tell you my text that I'm taking this from, the Holy Tablets. And if you have not purchased your Holy Tablet, you might want to go on the Internet and Google the Holy Tablets, because I'll be taking this from the tablet number 9, page 1384. Now that's 1384. You could find that in the second paragraph. The tablet number 9 reads, Jesus traveled to Sudan with his wife. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, with his wife. It goes on to say, lo, Jesus' marriage was on this wise. He reached the age of 27. His mother sought for him a wife, having mentioned to him, it is time to marry and have a family, fearing that his radical opinion would cause him harm. Unbeknown to him, Mary, his mother, had already picked for him a wife named Mary of
Magdalene. I repeat, named Mary of Magdalene. She lived in Bethany, in the east on the Jordan River, for she was one who witnessed his baptism and listened to his teaching along with his disciples, longing for his return home after his Shadrach and his break from the restriction of the essence. He took the teaching to the message and his wife and son and aside of him. At age 30, after much persecution for that year, he decided to travel again. At age 31, he traveled from Jerusalem to Arabia to visit Kaaba and his wife and his son, Simon, who was 1 and some odd months at this time, crossed the Reed Sea to Port Sudan to travel to a place called Omdurman today, to sit among the Mustara at the eternal fire. He stayed there in Sudan, studying and teaching for 2 years, returning again to Jerusalem at the beginning of age 33. He was met with much love by the people who looked for a Messiah, but the hearts of the leaders of the people turned against him for fear that he might dethrone them. So he sent his wife and his son away to live in the house of her sister and brother, Martha and Lazarus. And I do mean Martha and Lazarus. And he would visit her from time to time to see his family and play with his son. In one such visit, upon leaving early the next daylight hour, and it goes on to say on page 1338 at the top of tablet 9 and 11, hungry, the fig tree yield no fruits, and in anger, he cursed the fig tree. When he returned from his journey, upon arrival, he was met by his disciples, and he did many great things, and they had a welcome party. And when they had all slept the next day, he went out to see Yakima. And Yakima saw Jesus coming to him and said, "There is the Lamb of Elohim, Elohim, Elo, who takes away the sin of the world." This was the one I was talking about, for John did not teach much about Yakima to his absence. I said, "A man is coming after me, but he is greater than I am, because he existed before I was. He existed before I was. I did not know who he would be, but I came baptizing him in water, and in order to make him known to the people of Israel." And the next day, Yakima was standing again with two of his disciples when he saw Yeshua walking by. "There is the Lamb of Elohim," he said. The two disciples heard him say this and went with Yeshua. Yeshua turned and saw them following him and asked, "What are you looking for?" They answered, "Where do you live, Rabbi?" He said, "Come and see." It was then again 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So they went with him and saw where he lived and met his wife, Mary of Magdalene, there and her brother Lazarus and Jesus' son Simon, Bar-Jesus, and Martha. And there they kept the Sabbath because it was too late to go home. So they stayed and spent the rest of the day with him and his family. One of them was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. And once he found his brother Simon, he told him, "We have found the Messiah," which is being interpreted the Christ.
Then he took Simon to Yeshua. Yeshua looked at him and said, your name is Simon, son of John, but you will be called Cephas. The next day, Yeshua decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, come with me, for this Philip was from Bethsaida, the town where Andrew and Peter lived. Philip found Nathanael and told him, we have found the one whom Moses wrote about in the scriptures of the law, and whom the prophet also wrote about. He is Yeshua, adopted son of Joseph of Nazareth. Can anything good come from Nazareth? Nathanael asked. Come and see, answered Philip. When Yeshua saw Nathanael coming up to him, he said to him, here is a real Israelite. There is nothing false in him. Nathanael asked him, how do you know about me? Yeshua answered, I saw you when you were under the fig tree before Philip called you. Rabboni, answered Nathanael, you are the Elohim, Elohim. You are the ruler of all Israel. Yeshua said, do you have faith just because I told you I saw you when you were under the fig tree? You will see much greater things than this, son. And he said to him, I am telling you the truth. You will see heaven open and Elohim, Anakia, going up and coming down on the Waleth son of human being. That human being married, thus he was called the Iba, son of Elohim, and the whale, son of human beings. Lo, Lazarus, whose real name was Eleazar, meaning El, has help. There is symbolic meaning in the change of name. He was a student priest in the Essex order. He and Yeshua were in political union, and Lazarus had been excommunicated because he was a sympathetic and was in agreement with Yeshua, brother-in-law teaching. Yeshua was also a priest in the Essex order. The order consists of three degrees, Rabbi, Rebbe, and Rabboni. And these three degrees subdivided into many others. Yeshua was his brother-in-law, being espoused to both Martha and Mary Magdalene. Let me read that again. Yeshua was his brother-in-law, being espoused, meaning married, to both Martha and Mary Magdalene. Martha died before childbearing Mary Magdalene's first son. Simon Bar-Jesus was crucified. They had no other children until they took residence in Egypt between his 35th year and 120 A.D.C., year of his death. He had two other sons and daughters. The first daughter's name was Igalza. His second son's name was Zubara. And his third daughter's name was Sena. And his fourth son's name was Hapti. And the remaining children moved south into Nubia, and they merged into the people and became the roots and seeds of Mahdi family in Sudan. Mahdi simply means Ma and Hadi from Huda and Yeshua, simply Judah. The Mahdis are the lost tribe of Israel, Judah, called the Hadia, simply Hada, and Da mean both Israelites and Israelites rendering. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I want to stop for a minute. I said a whole mouthful, but I think you might have gotten the gist of it. We're talking about Jesus. our loving Savior, who we've been told was not be wedded. Here you have it, that Jesus' mother Mary saw that it was necessary for him to be married and found him a wife, that being Mary Magdalene. She bore him a son, and she was taken away to be placed in safekeeping. Jesus periodically visited her along with her sister Martha and her brother Lazarus. Jesus and Lazarus were both followers of the Essenes and in a political movement together. It was also explained later that Jesus was in an underground movement, and Jesus in this political movement, Lazarus excited the people with sedition like Jesus did as well, I would imagine. However, Lazarus got himself in some trouble with the politicians. Jesus needed to come home in order to assist him, but they could not get word to Jesus about this. So Jesus was not able to come home. During this time, the Romans began to try Lazarus, convict him and try him of this sedition. Lazarus was excommunicated and put out of the community, out of the city, meaning not dead, not wrapped up and put in a cave and killed. Excommunicated meant put out of the city, meaning you had no food, no connection. You were good as dead because you had no one to raise you. The term raising you means someone that has political powers, such as a priest would have, to speak on your behalf and to raise you out of the situation of excommunication. The death that the Bible speaks of, that Lazarus supposedly had died, was not a physical death at all. It was raising him back to the status of allowing him back into the city. Eventually, when Jesus did come to his aid, Mary and Martha both stood there saying, "Jesus, Jesus, Jesus, had you been here, Lazarus wouldn't have been excommunicated and ostracized from the city. Now, with your power and your priesthood and your authority, go and speak to those officials and raise him up and allow him back into the city again." And that's exactly what he did. He went out and called Lazarus to come back into the city, called him three times, and the officials and the Romans said, "What authority do you have to call that man back into the city? Who gave you the right to call him back into the city?" Now, mind you now, Jesus esteemed himself as a royal priest, and he deputized himself to speak on behalf of issues for lay people who were commoners, and with his royal priesthood, he usurped his authority and opened up the way for Lazarus to come back into the city. He did not physically die. Now, all of that is another story. It can be substantiated. What I'm trying to draw your attention to, ladies and gentlemen, this is an underground movement of Jesus, Lazarus, Mary, Magdalene, and Martha. Let me clarify one point here. The Mary Magdalene that you have been taught about, the whore, was a separate Mary altogether that Jesus lifted and raised, who was the whore. This Magdalene that he married is not the same Mary. And that could also be explained in further detail. Nevertheless, Jesus not only married Mary Magdalene, who he was betrothed to by his mother. It was an arranged marriage. He also married Martha as well. The customs were, women did not run up to a man at any time, ladies and gentlemen, unless they were their spouse and married. That was a custom. Hebrews, Israelites, all of the people did not break tradition. Tradition and customs were not broken the way they are now. The customs were adhered to. Now, with Jesus being married to both of them, you would say that this is a practice of polygamy. At the same time, Jesus went on to have more children and lineage
that still live beyond the age of 33. My question is, why did they depict this Mary Magdalene as being a whore? Why did they let people think that Mary was the same, one and the same person that Jesus healed from this whoredom behavior, and that this was the same Mary Magdalene that said, go and tell it? No, it was not the same Mary Magdalene. They were two separate people. Now, how do I know that? Because it's been substantiated. And I'm going to throw this question out to the audience, because we do have Jamel Harvey in the audience with us, who can give us some background information. He is the expert on the topic. I merely read the information to you to give you a foundation. Jamel, I'm going to make sure he's in the atmosphere here so he can come in the room. Good evening, Jamel. Good evening, Jamel. Good evening, Jamel. Okay, Jamel is getting his volume back up again. I heard him for a while there, and it looked like to me he kind of faded out a little bit, but he'll be right back with us. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I want to give you that number, 646-478-0270. Now is the time to call in with your questions about Mary Magdalene, because we want to hear from you. Jamel,
yes.
Harvey, you're in the atmosphere. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay. We're talking about Mary Magdalene and wondering if you can help us out a little bit with some foundational information about the two different Mary Magdalene.
Yeah. First we have to really, really, really see that the world of Christianity, or the writers, the architects of Christianity, did a really bad job in terms of how they put out information for the salvation of the world. I mean, it's obvious. With the Jesus piece, you have to have the perfect example for humankind needs to have a family. Or else, why do you even have marriage institutions? Why does the government, why does any self-righteous organization look down upon a man or woman if they're not married? If, in fact, your Lord and Savior was never married, then that is a prerequisite for you not to marry, is it not, if you're going to follow the example? So why has the truth of Jesus having family and being a husband and a father, why is it not put out there? Okay, so you have to really begin from there, Umi. The Mary Magdalene piece is a beautiful piece. It really puts women in a better light because, here again, you're dealing with, number one, who was King James, the guy who basically put the Bible in motion, okay? He was homosexual. So how could he put Mary in a good light? Think about that for a minute. There was no plan to elevate Mary. So then now you have another story evolving, why the Catholic Church holds the Mother of God in such high esteem. Now, the Mother of God is Mary, right? The Catholic Church holds a woman as the Mother of God, but yet women from that time have been second-class citizens. What hypocrisy, okay? So Mary Magdalene, all right, what is it that we really need to know about Mary Magdalene? That she married Jesus? Of course. They had children? Yes, they did. In this movie that Tom Hanks played in, I forgot the name of it, but that, that movie basically was trying to say that Mary, you have two Marys. You have Mary Magdalene. You have another Mary that was a prostitute. Okay, she basically gave and bore witness to the divinity of Jesus. The other Mary was his wife. All right, and then you had Martha, who was his wife, who gave birth to Simon Bar-Jesus, but she died. So you had Mary escaping the Middle East to France with the children because of what was going on between the Essenes and the Roman Empire and this man called Jesus, all right? There's a whole story. That story is not told. We only get bits and pieces to make the theology, the religion, what it is. So basically there you have it in summation. But Mary Magdalene is the Mother of God, so they say. Now, herein, you have a woman who had children by a man who was a high priest, and they made the high priest into the Son of God and made the Son of God the most highest thing that you could be on the planet. But when you go to the book of Job 1 and verse 6, it tells you that the sons of God were gathered together there. So the Son of God is not an exclusive title to just Jesus alone. There are other sons of God in the Bible. Okay, I've said a lot. I hit your topic, but you have to see the whole picture to get the bigger understanding of what's going on here.
Now, I have a question. Maybe this might shed some light on the subject. I have a comment. The comment I have is that there was a number of questions asked about the marriage of Canaan. During that marriage, that Jesus and his mother Mary and Mary Magdalene went to, whose wedding, and why hasn't that wedding been identified, and why would all three of them be appearing at that wedding of Canaan? And could it possibly have been the wedding of Jesus?
Well, it was the wedding of Jesus, because here's the proof. And you can go back and really get this bit of factual information in terms of the culture. In the Middle East culture, you know, at that time, you could not go to anyone's wedding unless you were invited. And you can't do anything at a person's wedding unless you have permission. So turning to what, first of all, why would anyone go to Jesus and ask him to turn the water into wine? Or say, we're running out of wine, could you turn this water into wine? I mean, first of all, Jesus was at someone else's wedding, they led you to think. But Jesus was asked to do something. Was he a host or was he the bride? Okay? You don't ask the host, you know, if you could do something. You ask the bride or the groom for permission. So Jesus was the groom. He was the husband then. So Jesus was asked to turn the water to wine at his wedding. Why else would you have a wedding? Now, it's interesting to note, are there any identifications in that Bible story about whose wedding it was? No. So if you're led to believe, again, to lie to the children of Eve, to be like Eve, no facts, that this is Jesus attending whose wedding? No identifying marks as to whose wedding that was.
And that's my point, Jamel. There's been quite a few theologians who've debated about that whole concept, and they tried to say that it was the church who Jesus married, and that was the wedding of the church. Now, why would this prelude the whole concept of the coming of the church? How would you have something that preludes that? It didn't make sense at all, and nor can they substantiate it.
Because they don't have a substantial answer. They don't have an answer. So they always fall back on the church. Everything that can't be answered is always a scapegoat for the church. Well, the church. Well, look, the church wasn't established until what? The Isle of Patmos or before then, 96, 65 A.D.? We're talking about back in the year, what, 33? So this happens, what, 30, 40 years before the actual church got started? Because you go to the books of Acts, which have been chronicled to have been written in the year 65. They were first called Christians in about 65 to 70 A.D. This wedding took place in about 30 to 20, okay? So you got your chronological dates mixed up, so it's impossible for that to have been the church.
Absolutely, Jamel. And there lies my point, ladies and gentlemen. How could you be so clairvoyant and perceive that this had to happen where Jesus had a wedding before the church ever came into being? That's why when you take a timeline and use history, you can prove the misnomers and the fallacies and allegorical stories that are in the Bible. And if one had any common sense, they would see that if you took the timeline, use the A.D. or B.C., and find out did it occur prior to the situation or after, then you can disprove things that have been lied about. For years, the ministers and also the evangelists who were in school, we questioned that. We asked, wait a minute, something's wrong here. How do you have Jesus marrying the church and the church had not been invented during this wedding? And there was not a lot of attention put on this wedding. It was pushed to the side, and it was people were hoping that you would not ask for detailed information to expound upon it. It had to be somebody's wedding because when they left that wedding, why did Jesus and Mary go to Bethany, Mary Magdalene's hometown? What do you do at the wedding? Where do you go? And what do you call the after mass of the wedding, the after party, Jimmy? Now, what do you call it? It's what? Called a honeymoon. So Jesus and Mary also left to go to her hometown, to Bethany, for a honeymoon. Can we expound upon that a bit, Mr. Hart?
Yeah, well, I don't know about the hobby part, but yeah, it's real simple. Jesus, the wedding of Cana, that was the wedding of
Canaan.
Of Canaan, right, which meant that that was Jesus' wedding because he was the groom. He wasn't a guest, as they make you think. See, the whole thing with the Christian church is this. Since the days that the church always gave out edicts, always gave out directions, you can never question the church from, like, 500, 800 years ago. Now, that same situation exists today where you don't question preachers, where they don't have the answers. And the seminary schools only teach the geopolitical religion of Christianity to its coming-up preachers, right? So you have a situation that has to be upgraded. Christianity must upgrade itself or it will die out like fall turning into winter, okay?
Very good point, Jamel. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to insert something here. I've gone to theology school, and for this very reason, I decided to take a sabbatical from being an evangelist. I didn't feel qualified to explain to the people why I believe that some of the teachings that I had at theology school were false. So I didn't feel qualified to perpetuate those lies that they gave me to teach. So I decided to take a sabbatical. That situation, for one, the marriage of Canaan, never sat well with me, and I always felt that I was being lied to about the whole concept. The inception of the Immaculate Conception was another situation, and the Mary Magdalene story and the miracles of the Bible. Those were some of the prime reasons why I decided to take an escape route and give religion back until I could decipher some of the lies and the misnomers. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not trying to develop a caravan for any of you to follow or to do what Omi did. I'm telling you to be strong enough to challenge the questions that have been on the table for a while now. I'm telling you to be courageous enough to ask in your Sunday schools to expound upon these topics, to allow you to do research and further explore. You do the homework and the research. And as you do the homework and research, you decide for yourself. Don't let anyone tickle your ears with falsehoods and tell you it doesn't matter and that you just want to believe on false faith and stand up and just accept it because you're allowing faith to kick in. Now, when we have belief, we know what belief does to us, and it's for our belief that has caused a lot of problems. Now, let me tune in to Jamel again. Now, as you notice, there are questions that theologians and students are still asking. The biggest question should be is, where are the teachings of the African religion, and were they defiled, and were they considered as being pagan, and why don't you see African customs and tradition being taught to the students who are going to school for theology? Jamel, can you help me out with that question?
Profit and gain. If I come into your country with the troops and the overpowering military force, no, before I do that, I send my missionaries into your country. And I introduce this new theology. And then after that, after I see that I'm getting some toehold in your country, now I throw a coup. And in that coup, I make sure that the new leader of your country is definitely going to be some type of pro-Christian-minded individual that will set the seeds or set the wheels in motion to turn the whole country into a Christian country. So religion is basically profit and gain organization, all of it, Islam included. So it's all the same thing on me. It's about political conquest. It's about, you know, profit and gain. It's basically capitalism. So it's a thing that it has nothing to do with the true spirituality of the human being. It has everything to do with religion. Religion and spirituality are two different ball games altogether.
And good point, Jamel. And let me draw into that subject. Ladies and gentlemen, just as you join any group or club, you join that group for political reasons and political gain and benefits. If it does not have benefits and you've joined the organization, you've just wasted your time, money, and energy. When you choose a church, it's for political reasons. Can the church support me? Can it stand up on agendas that pertain to my community and my family? Will they teach me the foundation that I need to represent my culture and my community? When you join these organizations and you get their membership card, you have to hold them accountable. You have to hold them accountable to all of the belief systems they say they have. And you have to make sure that your belief system lines up with what their doctoral teachings are. Ask for a brochure of their doctoral teaching. See if your thought pattern lines up with that. Then ask for the benefits that you're going to get for your tithing. And don't let them tell you we're going to pay for the church, or we're going to create a building fund, or we're going to send missionaries out on the water to minister. Make them show you profit and loss documents so you can see where funds are going. Remember, you're part of this organization too. Now, for your tithes and offerings, when you get in a fix or something where your lights are getting turned off, or there is a possibility you're going to get a pink slip and you can't pay NIFSCO, you need to be able to take it to that church and say, I need a meeting with the staff. You're going to follow the procedures. You're not going to run in there half-hot talking about I need to pay this here bill or somebody got, you know, I got a disconnect notice. You're not going to do that. You're going to go in properly and follow the chain of command, ask to be seen by the deacon board so that you can present your case. And you're going to talk to them and say, look, I've been fighting and I had a job 6 months ago. I just got out of work. And now, you know, I don't have income coming in, and I wonder if I can draw from the bank right now because I definitely need assistance and subsistence. And if they have to tell you that there's only so many people that they give out that assistance to per year, and they've met their quota, and you're going to have to get back in line again and wait for next year, then what you need to tell them, I want to pull my membership, and I'll be back with you and in contact with you possibly around this time next year. Pull your membership. You can do it, because it's the same thing as any other organization. I'm not speaking against the church. I'm telling the church to get right, because we got too many people that are getting membership in an organization that they're getting no benefits from. So when they tell you at the end of the year they want to see your W-2 and your 1040, and they want to take you into consultation to calculate if you're properly investing your money so that you can have excess money left over for tithing, they're in your business now. They're in your pocketbook. You have to tell them this has nothing to do with the church. The church pays no business, pays no bills at my house, so they will not be looking at my 1040 or my W-2. If you're going in that church, opening up your privacy of your 1040 and your W-2s, you are inviting them into your accounting system. And that is something you need to rethink about if you're not being a good steward. Now, you have to do these things, ladies and gentlemen, because they'll take your membership for granted. And guess what? You have a signature that belongs to you. And in any contract that is not sound, and you didn't have a meeting of the minds with that contract, even if you buy a car and you purchase a car and you find out that they're in violation of something in that contract, you can invoke your name, invoke your signature, and pull it back. You could do the same and say, I want to invoke my signature until I've had enough time to look over your handbook and your benefit. This is when you start holding people accountable for what it is they say they're going to do for you. And I'm saying this, ladies and gentlemen, because there's a lot of fallacies and lies going on, and they're shoving it down the members' throats, and they're buying it. And then later on, they're feeling antsy about giving that $2,000 because they just didn't feel right because pastor got a brand new car and his wife got one too, and you still in that pushmobile. Now, come on. Let's use our senses here. Yes, we want the church to spring up in our community. Yes, we want them to have good things. But the church is not going to get rich off of people who are poor. You can't let them get rich off of people who are poor. Somebody has to use good judgment. Now, getting back to the churches, it's okay to ask them about doctoral beliefs. It's okay to take a sabbatical. And I know people on this show right now who have decided, I'm stuck between a hard rock and a bad place. I'm taking a sabbatical till I can find these things out for myself. That's where you can't say, Omi told me to do anything, or you can't say, I'm figuring that this person over here don't want to do this. You decide for yourself. Be a hero and stand for what's right for yourself. Now, this Mary Magdalene story, we're going to put it to rest today. We're going to bury that Mary Magdalene story that's been told and the lie that's been told. There's two Mary Magdalenes, and we told you that. And the Mary Magdalene that we're talking about that married Jesus, she was not a whore. She needs to go down in history as a saint. She was chosen by Mary. And if Mary had bad conduct in Iwapelu, why would she choose a whore for Jesus to marry? Now, we know that the story of Mary's marriage is not in the book. But they give you a hint to make you flip that card and say, what's that ace in the hole over there? There was a marriage. Now, push that point. Whose marriage was it? They give you a little bit of the truth, but they're waiting to see how many of you are awake that's going to step over there and say, come on now, we're going to press this issue. Tell us who the marriage was for during the marriage of Canaan. And don't talk to me about no church because the church wasn't invented then. Jesus could not be getting ready to marry something or marry somebody. And why would a man want to marry a church? Now, when you get into that issue, you press that issue. Now, here's something else that you might want to think about. Mary, Jesus' mother, knowing that she carries the mitochondria, allows Mary to have the ability to pass on the genes of the African trait. We're talking about Africans now. Now, we know that the woman only carries the XX chromosome. You can check this out in science. Last time I checked, the woman carries the XX chromosome, and the man carries the X and Y chromosome. A man can produce a male child. He is the one to decide if the child is going to be male, not the woman. She can only bore a female child. Now, if that is the case, and if Mary Magdalene had such an immaculate conception, and God does not change laws and concepts, he will not violate his own laws to prove a point to us. He doesn't have to. He could go through the process of the laws he created. Why would he violate his own laws to allow Mary to produce a male child when she only had the XX chromosome? She didn't have it in her capacity with her mitochondria to produce a male child, because a female can only produce, if she has to decide that there's no male involved, she can only produce a female child. Now, let me take you back to another story. Mary has a book out called The Book of Mary. Mary's mother, Jesus, was also gifted and talented, and Zechariah raised Mary. Zechariah was a shaman and gifted shaman and knew how to teach Mary metaphysics. Mary was taught metaphysics through Zechariah's. They purposely took Mary to her uncle Zacharias to train him. That's also in the Holy Tablets. This is not according to Omi. So Mary was very affluential in clairvoyant things. When Zacharias came back to the room after Mary had been there for a while, he asked her, how did you come about all this food? Where did it come from? And in so many words, Mary told him she begot the things, and he knew she never left the room. So where did it come from? Mary was being trained in metaphysics as well. This whole family knew the benefits of metaphysics training. Now, you must remember, all of Jesus' family didn't follow him. They all did not believe in metaphysicists. and they were not all Jesus' support system. However, Mary Magdalene was admiring Jesus from afar. And she was not admiring him because she was a whore and she wanted to take him to bed. She was one of the 12 disciples. And if you look in the Last Supper, you will see that the lovingest person to Jesus' side was not John, but in fact, Mary Magdalene, a female. Why does that picture look so feminine? And why did they tell you that John was just so feminine that he loved his dear Jesus so much? I don't think so. I think that was Mary. If we could get these lies straight, then we could understand what is really going on. There's a massacre, a discrimination of the women here in the Bible. Just like Dr. Ray Hagin indicated in his speech, and I quote him, where he said, God said that man does not need to be alone, so he created a woman for him. But prior to him creating a woman, he created all the fowls, he created all the animals. But God kept saying God, man shouldn't be alone. So what happened to the process? Why did all these animals come before Mary came or the woman came? So in essence, you must understand that the woman probably was here before the man was. She's a womb. Life comes up out of a womb. Now, since when did the rib become the womb and you can take a baby out of the rib, which is not a womb? That story doesn't sound too clever at all. So it would stand to reason that that Eve was here first and she was the womb that created all other living things after her own kind. Why would a man be producing a woman? It's a racial thing, ladies and gentlemen, and it's a racial thing that shows impartiality to the woman being lesser than the man. It has to be cleared up. It has to be addressed by the women. And women have to stand on their feet and see partiality and name it and indicate that it has to stop and it must be corrected. And it starts here with Mary Magdalene, according to Omi. It starts right here. The lies, the desecration, the impartiality, and the racial discrimination against women. If we carry the church, the hacks are the saints, and if every door tomorrow don't acknowledge what we're saying, we can close the church down overnight, ladies and gentlemen. That's what could possibly happen. So they must entertain your conversation to talk about these things because we are now with the power. Our eyes are opening, and all power is in our hand. The preacher is going to entertain and want to listen to us. Can you clarify this, Pastor? Can you correct this? Somebody wrote on Mr. Noma a racial remark about the woman and have perpetuated it and lied against Mary Magdalene. Can we correct this? Can we create a day for Mary Magdalene and uplift her and show the world that she was not the whore that Jesus so vetted with or followed him throughout his discipleship? It's important that we correct lies, ladies and gentlemen. It's very important. And our history has been so tampered with. And as African Americans, we have taken a second-class citizen seat. We've gotten regurgitated information, and it's been handed over to us. And we have not questioned it. If you know who you are, ladies and gentlemen, as African Americans, you begin to wonder, do I really need religion? Let me say that again. If I sprung up from a great creator and I have his essence and I have all knowledge and I'm omnipotent, omniconscious, I'm the lesser God, not the God, then I have the capability of becoming a God and growing up in my essence and spirit to have the qualities of a God, then signs and wonders should follow me. Then if that is the case, you might want to think some of this nonsense that they're teaching, you might want to think, was religion created for the God? Was religion created for the God, or did the God create the religion? Man created the religion, ladies and gentlemen, but it was not created for the African. spirituality springs up out of the black man. Iwapelu is in the black man's mitochondria, in his DNA. Goodness and kindness, long-suffering, has always been in the black man. Oh, when you know yourself, black people, when you know who you really are, you will stop your fighting and all your foolishness, and you will begin to love one another. And when you begin to love one another, love is more powerful than hate. When you strike a blow with love, the bullet is heavier than any type of manumission of a bullet that you can bring forward. When you wake up and see that going to church is a ritualistic thing, and hearing things that just bothers your conscience and makes you cringe up in church and want to stand up and say, stop it. Those are lies. We're kings and we're queens. All civilization came from us. Europeans cannot civilize a people who were the civilizers. And if you take a European book and bring it to us to civilize us, then what are you doing? You're allowing the child to manage the gods. And that's not what God has told you to do, ministers. You're supposed to wake up the people. You know the truth. I've been a minister. I've worked with you. You know the truth. And you knew I knew the truth because you saw the light in my eye. So you were watching me to see how awake I was. Did not you know my silence indicated that I was fully awake? Now it's time for us to jar our sisters and brothers and wake them up. Don't think that it's strange that we're waking up in this hour and time. Women, you're powerful. Let me say that again. Women, you're powerful. You hold destiny in your hand. What you decide to do with it is very important. Jamel, I'm going to call you back to the stage. Jamel.
Yes, Tommy.
What must we do to change the conditions of our situation as a black people now that the truth is coming out?
Well, you first have to let me strike a blow at laziness. You must first honor Mother Earth, honor yourself, clean up your communities, clean up yourself first. Go inside of you and clean yourself up. You know, get yourself right. How can you want to raise or clean anybody else up and you're polluted? So you have to take that inward journey to make sure that you're right. And that's the greatest thing I can really say. The solution is first get yourself together. And getting yourself together means loving self and kind and clinging to your own ways of life. Get back in tune with nature. Get back in tune with your natural self. Study what we've talked here today. Study religion, all of them. Study all the religions, okay? Have no racism. Have no room in your body for racism. This is not about hating Europeans or Caucasians. This is about re-identifying who you are. It's a shame that Caucasian played an ugly hand in how we feel today because of what happened 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago during the Jim Crow era. Those scars are still there, but they're the people themselves. So it's about getting yourself together as a man or woman in America and moving forward in this capitalistic system, but don't allow the capitalism to stop you from having a spiritual appetite and your spirit can grow. So get yourself together with all those facts stated. Know who you are. Know where you come from. Know where your land is. Know what your dietary culture is. Know your clothing culture. Know your entertainment culture. There's a lot that you have to discover in order to make that link back to self. And always love self and kind. Love self and kind. Reach out and ask that the Most High will give you the direction or send someone into your life to help make that journey an easy one, because it can be difficult hearing this, not having any reference to go to. Maybe the only place you have to go is to your church, and then your preacher has been basically trained to keep you in the spell of ignorance, the spell of European Christianity, because that's all they know. They truly believe that European Christianity is going to get them into heaven, or it's going to help them in terms of being saved. Saved from what? You're already in hell. Release the hell by accepting self and kind, loving yourself, and love yourself enough to go and research and study everything that's been said here. Just don't believe what we're saying. Go somewhere, do the research, and discover for yourself. Only through that way will you be motivated to go further. That is the solution for right now.
I didn't hear you. What did you say to
me? Thank you for allowing me to come on your program.
Thank you so very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to say something to the Caucasian people that frequently view my room. This is specifically being viewed for you, so that you can see that there is another side to the African American, and there's a conscious side that is that every now and then we wake up out of our anesthetism, and there is a conscious side that wants to give you a chance to make things better. And as we preach and talk about these things, some of you are just finding out about this too. And some of you even know, you knew about it, and you were waiting to see if we woke up. Now that we're waking up, the lie and the cat is out of the hat. It's time for you to do something different. It's time for you to make changes in political arenas. It's time for you to make changes in the movement of the 14th Amendment. It's time for you to talk about what the cry is for the African Americans. Just as we hear the hip-hoppers cry out, they're crying out to raise up a people like Jamel and I because they are so hurt and they have been so desecrated, and they're wondering why we haven't been upset about it. But it wasn't our time yet, but our time is now. And now that we know, I don't want you to be baffled by angry African-Americans, because we can't get angry and we can't get even, because we all have to exist here in this universe, but we have to learn to exist here cohesively without killing one another. Now, don't go get your bombs and your guns and put locks on your door thinking we're coming after anybody. And don't go try to lock up men and women thinking you can lock us all up. Don't go do that. We know the moves, and the Spirit tells us what the things are that you're afraid of. And when a European gets afraid, he does a whole lot of silly and crazy things. We're spiritual people, and you can't fool us, and you can't hide things from us. So what we're going to tell you is unite with us. Admit the fact that lies have been put in the Bible. And even come into the churches to talk about it. And tell them firsthand from the theologian schools what you've done to keep us castrated and to keep us suppressed. Talk about it and say, yes, we made that move. But now that you know, we got to try something different. We got to do something a little different. Because you can't defeat us unless we allow you to. And now that we awake, you know we're not going to allow you to. So you'll never defeat us. So it's time to unite and band with us so that you have a place in this university to live, and it will go well with you, because the ancestors will come up after you if you do anything to harm us. The very ancestors. I don't even want to tell you what the ancestors did to some people that were trying to harm me. I don't even want to tell you. I don't even have to cry loud and spare a lot. The ancestors know when people's hearts are right, and if you're coming to violate them in any way or dig holes, the ancestors will allow you to fall in those holes. Caucasians, you don't want to fall in no more holes. It's time for you to get up, too, and come up, too. And if you want to come up with us, we allow you to come up right side of us, but we're not going to fight you no more or go through no more stuff where we got to watch you in our sleep and wonder what you're doing while we're asleep. We're not doing that no more. The Holy Spirit is going to be sick on you. And when the Holy Spirit is sick on you, you tell on yourself. So I'm asking you kindly to come to your senses. And come to your senses now. Don't shut our show off. Don't do all kinds of manners of things to us. Get with us and ask us how we can negotiate. There's good and evil that exists. No devil, as I told you. You don't want me to have to act like evil, because evil is in me just like it's in you. It's in duality. It's a natural thing for evil to rise up when they've been done harm to. But we can do things in duality and in peace is what we are going to bring about. And Europeans, you're going to do it for us, and you're going to step in there, and you're going to give us the connection, the transition we need so that we don't spend another decade dealing with lies. I wonder if there's a European out there that's ready to make that transition today. I'm speaking to you, European. You follow me, you listen to Army. My preaching is good for you and for my black people. It is not just a good preaching for Africans. We have to live on this planet together. And in order to do that, you've got to make some changes too. And you've got to make them readily, because our churches are suffering, and some of them need to be retransitioned, and they need to come up to date on all this false teaching that they're teaching. You could do that, Europeans. You could do that overnight. I know you can. Take the preachers back on the back porch and tell them to change the plan of what they're teaching. Give them a new book if you have to, but work with us. Work with us. Work with us. Because it's time for a change. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for being here with Omi and going all the way. My sweet Mary Magdalene is going to thank me for trying to vindicate her. I know. The spirits are pleased with what we've done today. And then nothing you can tell me to make me think different. Excuse me. There's nothing you can tell me to make me think different. The room grew still as she made her way to Jesus, as she trembled from the tears that made her blind. Still on she came. She even heard some folk whisper, see, there's no place here for her kind. And though she spoke no words, everything she said was heard as she tore the oil for her master from her box of alabaster. And I came to pour my praise on him like oil from Mary's alabaster box. Don't be angry if I wash his feet with my tears, then I dry them with my hair. With my hair, see you went there. The night they found me, you did not feel what I felt when they wrapped their loving arms all around me. And you don't know the cause of the oil in my hair. The best is box. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for entertaining this subject and this topic this evening. Now that you know the oil in the alabaster box, don't forget, Mary Magdalene was a saint. She was married to our Lord and Savior. She was not a whore. She was not a prostitute, but a mother of a child. Once again, ladies, thank you for allowing me to perpetuate the truth on you. Truth will rise to the top. Let truth rise to the top on this day, November the 26th. Let it be elevated and perpetuated. And may women see land and consider that land and take their proper places as leaders and position themselves to go up against issues that need to be addressed. And we're going to address the issues in the church. Pastors, whether you like it or not, we're going to address those. Because lies cannot be kept alive unless we give it oxygen. And we're not infusing the lies anymore. We're not giving breath to the lies. We've come from one reason. And that is the call on the Moni woman. I told you that was coming. I told you that Zion was pregnant and she couldn't give birth. She couldn't give birth until the time was ready. The Moni women are giving birth right now to concepts, new concept. I know it's a new concept for you. I understand. Oh, boy, do I understand that it's a new concept for you. But I want you to understand that Zion is giving birth to concepts all over the land today. And as we give birth to new concepts, don't shake your head about Omi and say, why did Omi have to bring this up? Don't shake your head and say, why don't Omi stop it? Be glad that Omi brought truth out. Be glad that Omi addressed the issues for women today. A lot of women have gotten free today. You're a free woman. A lot of women have gotten free today. Those of you who might be prostitutes and you clinged on to the Mary Magdalene story, you can get free today. Your freedom is here, ladies. You can get that freedom today. And you can live a better life because Mary Magdalene was no whore. You can lift yourself up and you can begin to be a family woman again. This message was not only preached for you, but for the men too. Your sweet Mary was a good woman because Jesus is not about no junk, and he would not prophesy himself or prostrate himself across the community with no junk. So now you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Help me to go and tell it like Mary Magdalene did, the first evangelist. Help me to go and tell it. Find the books. Get the holy tablet. Read for yourself. Then you go and tell it. Decipher for yourself. Divide the rightfully divide the word of truth for yourself. Don't tell them that Omi told you. Go research and say, I found it for myself. I am not a soothsayer. I am not a converter and an advocate of anything other than the truth. As I took my sabbatical, I asked that God would help me find my higher self and find truth wherever it would be, and that religion would not be something that I cling to, and that I would find truth, and I would decree that I was nothing but a born-again African spiritualist. That is what my decree is. No denomination, a born-again African spiritualist, and searching for truth. I hope I've given you the truth that you need today to excel. I hope I've given you the truth that you need to advance yourself. But most of all, let us come together, ladies and gentlemen, Caucasian, Native Americans, Mid-Easterners, African-Americans, African traditionalists, and the diaspora. Let us come together because this earth was created for all of us, and it was created for the black man, the yellow man, the brown man, and the white man. We must live in harmony, and as we live in harmony, we cannot undermine any denomination of people or women, and we cannot continue with the lies. They have to stop. Caucasian, I hope you found a place here, a home here in this room, where you can find truth and learn the truth. You can count on me to give it to you from Omi. You can count on me that I'm not trying to exclude you. So go back and tell your people that I'm not the one that you should do harm to or to desecrate, but to support me. I'm looking to see your support. I know you will, because the ancestors are going to speak to you. At the sound of my voice, they're going to speak to you. And you're going to begin to see that the truth freed you as well as it freed some of our African Americans. Once again, I'd like to say thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart that you spent this evening with me and did part one and part two of Mary Magdalene. She is definitely pleased with you. The ancestors will be pleased with you, and it will go well with you. And may your households be blessed down to the thousand generation. And may the children in your loin who are not even yet born yet, may they also be blessed. I say blessings and curses that we have the power to give in our tongue. But I speak blessings over you and grace and abundant grace. And I say, go in peace and sin no more with this lying story of the Mary Magdalene story. Odabo.